interview with Lieutenant Colonel Joe Saltznikovsky, 3rd of May, 1997. Perhaps we could start this morning by you giving us an overview of your early service career with the RCN, starting when you entered, and any details as it relates to education or courses, your pilot training up until 1963, when you were the head test pilot for the Assiniboine trials in 1963.
Alrighty. Joined the Navy in 1949 via a pretty standard route, the Royal Roads, and I was in the first tri-service group that went through. Finished in 1949, 2 years, which was quite enough of an institution run by its own inmates, and went to sea as a midshipman on board HMCS Ontario. Was promoted to midshipman, immediately lost pay from cadet, and we were living on $90 a month, which meant that we didn't live very well, but we still had fun. So 2 years as a midshipman, promoted to acting sub-lieutenant, and then it was a standard route to England for sub-lieutenant's courses, sub-lieutenant's courses. Back to Canada, joined my first ship, which was Crusader, became the gunnery officer, the public works officer, any other job that Dick Lear could think of at the time. That was good fun too, but applied for flying training while on board. And then we had to shift ships from Crusader to Sussex Vale. And while on board Sussex Vale, got a posting down to Pensacola for flying training. So that was in 1953. Flying training was pretty regular. You know, the most exciting part of it, of course, was taking a Harvard to the flight deck. And I had a very good LSO who gave me a cut when there was still what looked like about a quarter of a mile of clear water between the flight deck and myself. However, we made it, and we made 6 for 6, which was the desirable ratio. From there, went back to VX-10. Sorry, not to VX-10, but to for 871 Squadron on Banshees, and flew Banshees for a couple of years until they went out of service. Most exciting part being, of course, on the carrier. After 871 was disbanded, I joined VX-10 and was given the job of buying trackers for the Navy at de Havilland, which was also just a marvelous posting, because I was out of sight, out of mind. And used to fly back once a month to replenish the coffers and find out what's going on. However, after that, it was down to Patuxent River in 1960 for the test pilot's course down there, which was one of the hardest courses I've ever been on, and I have never worked so hard in my life. However, it was most enjoyable. The people were good, the staff was good, the airplanes were outstanding, and it was still in those days, here's the book, go fly it. So it was quite an experience. In any case, after that, we managed to stay down at Patuxent River for 3 years, doing some test flying, particularly helicopters, but flew everything they had from soup to nuts, and including the Phantoms, Crusaders, F-4D Skyrays, Bell helicopters, all kinds of helicopters. And that went on till 1963, when I was shifted to Sikorsky to buy the HIS-2s for the Navy, and to test fly them, of course. And from there, it was back to VX-10 and the Haldon project, which was delightful because it was interesting, it was new. Well, not completely new, but it was new for the sizes involved, and it was mine, so I loved it.
Right. Perhaps if we can go back for a moment or two, your early experience was as a fixed-wing pilot with the 871 Squadron, but when you went down to Patuxent River for the test pilot course, was that on fixed-wing aircraft, or was that rotary wing and fixed-wing?
It was both. I always refused to be classified as either that or the other, because it always limits you. So the way I looked at it, yes, I was on both. I flew both. And I went down there primarily. I think the Navy was really looking for a replacement for the their present helicopters of the day, and they had me in mind as becoming knowledgeable about all the latest helicopters coming out of the United States. As it worked out, this is exactly what happened. But it was basically test flying. Most of the test flying at the school in those days involved fixed-wing flying.
So your situation was somewhat unusual then. I've talked to others that went down to Patuxent River for the test pilot course, and they went strictly on fixed-wing aircraft, and later were checked out in helicopters at the Sikorsky aircraft plant, for example. But it sounds like your experience at Patuxent River was quite different.
Well, yes and no, I suppose, because I went down having completed the helicopter course at Shearwater. So I was a qualified helicopter pilot when I went to Patuxent River, but the school had no helicopters at the time, so it was strictly fixed-wing flying.
So when you took this course at Shearwater, was that under HS-50 Squadron?
Yes, it was.
And they would have been flying the...
Horses.
The horses, the S-55?
H-04-S-3.
All right. So how long would that course have been at Shearwater?
Oh, boy.
Roughly?
Two and a half months.
2.5 months?
3 months.
And that would be almost exclusively flying with some courses as well?
Well, it was flying with the Bell, the original little Bell, bubble Bells, and then going solo and getting checked out and doing all the funny things you do with helicopters like that, and then graduating to the HO4S. And then just before Patuxent River, of course, I had my graduating exercise with the commanding officer of HS-50, it was HU-21.
HU-21.
Yeah.
Who would have been doing the, or who was responsible for the training when you were taking the course?
HU-21.
HU-21,
yeah.
All right. That was the utility squadron?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, they did all the helicopter training.
So when you went down to Patuxent River, the intensity of the course was turned up several notches in order to qualify as a test pilot. What sort of work would you be doing down at Patuxent River?
Well, you know, the Americans are funny, you know. If they get a group of people on a course like a test pilot's course, and they see that everybody is doing well on the course and hacking the problems given to them, then they just step up the tempo a little until everybody's behind, you know, and running pretty hard again. So, but, you know, it's standard. It's stability and control, performance, any of the standard things that an airplane has to go through to gain its final certification or suitability for service use.
Do you remember who you were down there on the course with from the RCN? Were there any other officers?
No.
So you were down there by yourself.
That was the only one.
You mentioned earlier that you flew a number of aircraft down there at Patuxent River during your 3 years. Did you fly the Cayman helicopter?
Oh, yes.
What are your impressions of that particular aircraft?
Well, Charlie Command was a very charming person. However, he had a problem with that particular airplane. The first flight I did in it was doing some auto-rotation testing and found out afterwards that 80% of the blades were stalled during the approach in an auto-rotation. So it was quite a surprise at the bottom.
I can imagine that was potentially a very dangerous situation.
Yeah, well, he fixed that, you know, took time, money. But he fixed that. He fixed a few other problems, but he couldn't fix one, I think, which was payload. You know, I still remember a 5 o'clock in the morning test flight that we did. Temperature, pressures, no wind, everything just as ideal as it could be. And they loaded the helicopter full of cement and iron, you know, up to 9,500 pounds, I think it was. And everybody was out there looking, and yeah, took off, managed to stagger it, get it airborne for a couple of seconds, and then it just floated right back down to the ground.
Oh, really?
Well, overloaded.
Didn't have the lift capability.
No.
Now, was the Command a single-engine turbine?
Yeah, T-58, one, two.
I have heard from several individuals that Command Corporation discussed adding an additional gas turbine engine to increase the performance of that particular aircraft. Do you have any recollection of that?
Not in my day. There's no room to put it.
So no. It would have required a major modification.
Major redesign. And they were redesigning that helicopter every second day as it was.
Do you remember any other sort of problems with that particular aircraft? Engineering or mechanical problems?
Well, one was... the test pilot and I were lying in the hospital bed because our helicopter had ended up in somebody's backyard. And Charlie comes in with what's called a sprag clutch, which is a clutch that allows you to auto-rotate. And it allows you to transmit power to the rotor head, depending on which way you were going. Well, our sprag clutch spragged, and all of a sudden we had no clutch at all, and we ended up in this guy's backyard. But Charlie comes to us in the hospital bed and said, "I got a fix for it. He's got a brand new sprag clutch." He said, "Well, why in hell didn't you put the damn thing in?"
That's somewhat unusual. Is that an indication of how competitive that the helicopter market was, that the president of the company would come in to discuss his particular aircraft while you're in a hospital bed?
Well, no, because it's you know, Cayman was a very small operation, or a relatively small operation in those days, and Charlie was... very much a part of it, and so he was interested in everything that was going on. So, yeah, no, he'd come out, you know, and talk to his test pilots and talk to his engineers and talk to his manufacturers, and he was there all the time. So he was very good that way.
The RCN was interested in procuring that particular helicopter before we acquired the Sea King helicopters. What was your relationship with Cayman in terms of liaison? Was there any sharing of information between yourself as a test pilot and their engineers to sort out the problems?
Oh, yeah. No, there's no question, you know, that they were always privy to the results of the test flight. And they did an awful lot of their own test flying, so they knew what the bloody problems were. You know?
So they were receiving similar reports from their test pilots as well as U.S. Navy test pilots?
Well, I would hope so. You know, there's no way that I can confirm that.
Right.
But, no, I was fortunate enough to be in the right place at the right time to pass on information through our headquarters in Washington. Of course, with the blessing of the United States Navy, because I always gave them a copy of what I was writing. And so it had to be vetted that way. But they were privy, the Canadian Navy was privy to what was going on with the Cayman, with the HIS-2, with the H-46, with anything that I got my hands on.
Were people coming down from either Shearwater or headquarters to talk to you personally about these particular aircraft, or were they relying almost exclusively upon your written reports that were going back through the Joint Staff in Washington?
Well, I don't know how, you know, whether rely is the proper terminology. No, they didn't come down too often. Once in a while somebody would come down to Washington and they want to talk, I think they were quite happy with the information that they were getting. So, I was in a funny position, really. You know, you're kind of spying and you're kind of not spying. But,
right.
But we worked it out, and the big thing was to get the information home.
When did you first start flying the CHSS-2? If I remember correctly, that the first one that was rolled out of the plant was in 1959, and the USN began their test and evaluations.
Yeah.
But the Canadian Navy didn't start until much later investigating that aircraft. Is that correct?
That is correct, but you got to remember that was the United States designator for that was the HSS-2.
Right.
CHSS-2 means Canadian.
Right.
So, we just got to keep that straight.
We'll just stop the tape for a moment. So, the first production Sikorsky rolls off the line in 1959, and the USN begins their testing and evaluation of that particular aircraft. And you'd mentioned while the tape was turned off that you first started to fly the Sea King in the summer, August 1961, which is 2 years before headquarters dispatches the HSS-2 evaluation team down to investigate that aircraft as a replacement for the command helicopter, which has run into all sorts of technical and mechanical problems. I'm wondering if you could tell us what your first impressions were of the Sea King helicopter, particularly in comparison to the command.
Well, I really don't want to compare the two because you're comparing apples and oranges. No, one is a very big helicopter, built specifically for ASW at the time, but capable of many other missions, as it turns out. And the Cayman was about half the size to begin with half the capabilities. So you really can't compare them. But for the job that the HIS-2 was designed for, it proved to be an excellent, excellent platform. And a very good design and with lots of growth potential. It had its problems, same as any helicopter or any airplane does, and still does. You're in a very vibratory environment, and as some wag put it, you know, you've got 1.5 million parts flying formation. You know, the airplane, as it turned out, passed its evaluation quite well for the United States. It had problems, but this is normal. Anything that complicated will. But it was an excellent platform.
Well, before we discuss some of the problems that that you remember about that aircraft, where were you checked out on the Sea King helicopter? Was that at Patuxent River, or was that at the Sikorsky aircraft plant?
Well, it all started, really, with the idea, I guess, that, you know, if you're a test pilot, test flying this airplane, that you know how to fly it. And basically, the checkout procedure consisted of a flight with one of the more senior pilots, and then you just picking up after him. There was no formal academic type of checkout. You read everything you could get your hands on the airplane, and then went out and flew it a couple of times with somebody else. And then if you were assigned to do some testing, performance testing or stability control or what have you, you know, you went out and did it.
When you say that that you were checked out by a senior pilot, would that have been USN or would that have been a Sikorsky pilot?
No, it was, as a matter of fact, it was a Marine.
Oh, a Marine. All right, okay. The other possibility. So what were some of the problems that you can remember about the HSS-2 aircraft?
Oh, nothing really stands out, you know, except vibratory problems. They had cracks appearing all over the airplane. There were some problems with the folding head initially. Again, things that are, you know, pretty standard in a complicated piece of kit like that airplane was. But there was no major basic fault, if I remember correctly. You know, there was nothing that would ground the thing almost immediately from start. I think, as I said, I think it passed its naval preliminary evaluation quite nicely, then went on to service test and introduction into the fleet.
How long is the service test process?
Oh, now, boy, you're getting me. However, it's usually about a year. And things start running concurrently. You're doing preliminary evaluation. You're starting the service tests up to the envelope that's been cleared. And then, almost concurrently, you're starting fleet introduction. So the whole thing probably took about, oh, maybe 3 years, 4 years.
All right. Now that's what the USN is going through, and VX-10 will go through similar sorts of trials for the Canadian Navy, I assume.
Well, not quite, because you don't have to go through all the preliminary things like stability and control, performance. It's all there. It's all documented. And you have that, you know, so the VX-10 one was primarily inclined towards the hull down, and the fleet introduction, or Canadian introduction in the Canadian Navy, was just getting people, pilots, crew, and ground crew familiar with the airplane.
Right.
To operate it.
Okay. Now, while you're during the early days, 1961, while you're flying this aircraft, you are obviously writing reports about this particular aircraft, and they're being sent to joint staff in Washington and then being transported or sent back up to Ottawa for them to have a look at. Were you aware of what the staff requirements were that the Canadian Navy had for the various
No.
aircraft, or were you writing your reports separate from any knowledge of the staff reports?
I was just writing them separate. I had an idea of what we were looking for, but I certainly didn't have the detailed staff requirements. So, nor was there any reason for me to have them.
Right. Now, because we don't have the paperwork and many of the reports from VX-10 available, How detailed are these reports that you were writing to send to Washington and then up to Ottawa? What sort of information would be covered off in these reports?
Any major defect found would be reported on. But basically, you know, how the test was going, whether everything was going reasonably well, whether the airplane was meeting its specifications, whether any major problems crept up or anything of that nature. And they were detailed yet short, because you have to remember that I couldn't let my own personality or my own thoughts really into what I was writing, and two, I had to vet it through the American Navy. So they had to be happy with what I was writing.
Right. Before it ever went to Washington.
That's right.
All right. You know,
so it was quite a trick to word it just right.
Walking a fine line?
To get across what you were trying to get across. But, you know, they were detailed enough. Usually on any one airplane or any one test or something like that, it would be a once-a-month report with maybe half a page.
All right.
On each aircraft, and just hitting the highlights.
Okay. Now, prior to you writing these reports, when you're actually flying the aircraft at Patuxent River, are these all local trials in the Patuxent River area?
No, your naval preliminary evaluation trials normally takes place at the contractors.
At the contractors, okay.
As soon as he has an envelope that's flyable, then the United States Navy steps in, and they start flying, and they start doing their evaluation.
And that would be at Patuxent River itself,
or...? No, most of the preliminary evaluation would be at the contractors. Service test would be done at Patuxent River.
Okay.
By that time, see, the production line probably produced enough airplanes for a number to be sent.
Now, does it move... It strikes me that it would move away from Patuxent River eventually for operational testing and flying of the aircraft,
yeah.
Whether it's aboard the American aircraft carriers or, in the example of the Canadians, aboard the destroyers.
Yes.
Is that accurate?
Well, yes, but again, we're talking about scale. Carrier suitability was part of the test, Patuxent River's test mission. So they'd be checked out by Pax River on the carriers, whether it be jeep carriers, helicopter carriers, whatever, first. And then the Navy itself would get it. But the operational fleet introduction normally took place in places like Jacksonville or NAS Jacksonville or up in Boston or wherever.
All right. So, for example, would VX-1 in the USN at Pensacola or Key West those sorts of operational flying?
Well, yes, but there again, VX is denotes experimental. You see, so it's not fleet, not
right.
Really.
Okay.
You know, they had fleet units that were formed especially, and are still formed to introduce these airplanes, new airplanes, into the fleet, and they will take a group of pilots and ground crew and all the rest of it, and put them through formal courses on the airplane.
All right.
No, before the squadron actually forms, grabs the new airplanes and goes someplace.
All right. So if we could move forward just a little bit here. Were you still at Patuxent River when the HSS-2 evaluation team was sent down from Canada to Patuxent River?
Now, when were they sent down?
I'll just stop the tape and give you that date. The HSS-2 evaluation team was sent down in early 1961. You were flying the Sea King helicopter in August of 1961. Do you remember any meetings with that team or sharing of information?
No, not really. They didn't appear at Patuxent River, to my recollection, so I think I might have talked to them in Washington, but it's I'm afraid that my memory is like a steel trap. It's only good for about 2 seconds these days.
But from the Canadian perspective, I mean, you were the only pilot that was flying the Sea King.
Yeah.
And the first to do so.
I don't think I was the first. I think there was other people who flew it before me. But
in the RCN?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
But I can't be sure right now. So.
I know that there was a number of people that were checked out on the Sea King, like the evaluation team, but that was done at the Sikorsky plant.
That's right.
Itself, yeah. Before they went on down to VX-1.
So obviously I was not the first.
All right. Okay. Just stop the tape here and we'll turn it over to the other side.